Hey, welcome to week 7 of the spring core group curriculum for CSF. This is Dylan, and I'm here with my pal Kennedy.
Hello.
And we are going to be talking about John 15, 1 through 11. So, you know the drill. Don't listen to this podcast before you do the kind of first section of the workbook. Don't do it. Because we want you to spend time in this passage for yourself with the Lord first before you come to this podcast. Let this podcast kind of be like a reflection before you go to group.
Yes.
Let it kind of like stew and like get some ideas that you've already had more solidified in your brain. So that way when you go to group, you're ready to process life, process the scriptures, and process God with your pals.
That is good.
Come on. So yeah, go do that. Take a day, take a couple days. I don't care, but see you in a bit. So see ya.
See ya.
And we're back. So Kennedy, we're in John 15. And we are in the little part of John called like the upper room part of John, where it's Passover. Before this, Jesus has washed his disciples' feet. What a great little story. And now he's kind of talking to them, kind of giving them like his final teaching before he's arrested and is crucified. So let's talk about this passage. It talks about, I just have a big, this is a big question.
Okay.
We're going to start with the big one. The first verse says, I am the true vine and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit. Well, every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes. I want to talk about bearing fruit.
Okay.
What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a very Christian-y word, a very Bible-y word. I think sometimes it can mean, like, two people could say the phrase bearing fruit to each other and mean completely different things and walk away thinking they're saying the same thing. So we don't have to, like, perfectly define it.
Mm-hmm.
But what are some ways that we mean bear fruit? Or what could this passage mean?
That is a big question.
You're the expert.
Not the expert. Bear fruit can mean many things. I think we can talk about fruit of the spirit. So we can talk about maybe like character qualities or traits like love, joy, peace, patience.
Yeah, so growing in Christ-likeness
right.
is bearing fruit.
We could talk about salvations or how many souls we've won
yeah.
if we baptize people or...
Very like evangelistic, like making disciples bearing fruit.
Right. We can talk about healings, maybe manifestations of the spirit.
Sweet.
Miracles.
Bearing right. fruit, responding to God, crazy encounters.
Yeah, many things. A wide range of things.
Yeah. I was also thinking of our contemplatives out there, of people who are like,
mm-hmm.
you know, I had this like mystical experience in contemplative mm-hmm. prayer and encountered God in a radical way. And that's like bearing fruit. But what's interesting to me is all of those things really aren't things that we do.
Mm-hmm.
Like all of the images that you just gave, like someone responding to God, it's just like clearly, responding to God for salvation, it's like clearly delineated in scripture that that is something that we participate in, but ultimately the work of salvation is God who
right.
does it. Let's think about fruit of the Spirit. It's the fruit of the Spirit. So I don't think we do that either.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy miraculous encounters. Obviously, I can't perform miracles. And more contemplative, you know, like imagining God's love for all people, that sort of experience that like Thomas Merton had in Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. That's an example. That is also a work of God. So like this whole bearing fruit thing, we talk about it so much and I think we like fret over, oh, I just don't think I'm bearing much fruit. How do I bear more fruit? Like, let's start talking about this. How do we wrestle with the fact that we aren't the ones who bear fruit? And what is like the answer to that? Like,
mm-hmm.
is bearing fruit even like the goal?
Right. Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think we're missing the point if we read the scripture and say, I'm going to remain in God so then I can go bear more fruit or bear much fruit. I think what Jesus is trying to get at here as this like kind of last teaching command charge for his disciples is just reminding them that they do nothing on their own, that we as followers of Christ do nothing on our own, and that the only thing we're called to do is to remain or to abide or to be with God. And that was kind of a phrase we threw around a lot last year at CSF. But yeah, I don't think the point of our relationship with the Lord or even time that we daily spend with Him should be, okay, I'm going to go do this thing so then later in my day I can do X, Y, Z thing because I had my quiet time or because I prayed or because I whatever, I did whatever with God. I think we're missing the point if we view our time with God that way.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Because I think I've in the past been like maybe a little legalistic about bearing fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So like, oh man, I haven't like led anybody to Christ in like a month. Really, a month seems like maybe too short of a time frame, like 6 months. am I really following God? And like almost putting my like worth and value in like someone, like me leading someone to Christ. Versus, and that being like a performative thing of like me mm-hmm. earning, like the thing that gets me in on God's love, and you know, the thing that proves me as a Christian, as a follower of Jesus is me bearing fruit instead of like, you know, Jesus, like the one who says like, enter through me,
right.
Not through your own works. And so I think I can like legalize bearing fruit to a almost Pharisaical level, the bad guys of the book of John, like we've talked about it already, but to being, you know, trying to earn our way to God through like something like bearing fruit, and using like spirituality, using Christianity, using following Jesus to try to be a legalistic person again, like just reverting back to legalism.
Mm-hmm.
But this helps me kind of set my sights on like, wait, okay, so my goal is to like, if we're using the kind of gardening imagery, like to plant my roots in the Lord, which is helpful. And I think freeing, but at the same time, it doesn't mean that we throw off those things about bearing fruit that like, you know, we suddenly can't be permissible of like, oh, I don't have to like share my faith with anybody because it's not about that anymore. I think there's definitely a part of participation in those things, but that comes from our abiding, not from our striving.
That's good. Abiding versus striving.
Come on.
That's good.
Love talking about it. So, I have a question then about this kind of vine, branches, gardening imagery. You know, we all know. you're a farmer.
Oh, awesome. I didn't know what you're going to say.
or if not actually a farmer.
I got a hat on today.
You do have a Carhartt hat on, which is like
and a flannel.
So farmer. It's almost overwhelming. But yeah, let's talk about this, about planting our roots, about like this gardening imagery. How has that helped you in your relationship with God in things like a quiet time or, you know, praying, reading the Bible?
Mm-hmm.
How does that help you kind of imagine and actually live out what following Jesus looks like?
Yeah, good question. I think not because I'm a farmer, although I'm not a farmer. I did grow up on a farm. For anyone who's listening does not know me. I grew up on a farm.
Come on. Henry County.
Henry County.
Home of Wendelberry. My favorite
I'm not telling you my address.
Farmer.
You don't go to my house. Oh, your favorite farmer.
Well, also one of my favorite authors, but
yeah.
He's only my favorite farmer because he's one of my favorite authors.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great. He's
sorry, I digress. I got to bring him up every semester.
Yeah, okay. Anyways, though, when I read this passage, I like to really visually see what's going on here. And so when John 15 talks about, or Jesus talks about like being the branch or remaining in the vine, or we can bear no fruit. I remember this passage that I read. It's not a passage. It's a from a Cultivate book that talks about pruning and like a farmer pruning back these orange trees because, so how pruning works is that.
This is good. This is helpful. Because I don't think we live in an agricultural world anymore. And so this is all almost like esoteric stuff that nobody deals with. So what does this mean? How does this help us? This is all everything I want to know. So thank you. Keep going.
So my dad planted like a row of fruit trees when we first moved to our house. We moved to a farm like 15 years ago. And so how fruit trees work is that they grow and it looks like they're getting big and like luscious and starting to bear fruit, like literal fruit, oranges or apples or whatever the fruit tree is. But the farmer for like the first 5 years will prune back and actually cut off the fruit, even if it looks like it's good and ready to be picked. He will prune back the branches and prune back the things that are actually bearing the oranges or apples or whatever, so that the next season it will bear even more fruit and like more, like a richer, like a better fruit that's ready for harvest. And so I always picture that when I think of this passage, because I think even when we're talking about pruning, which is a whole kind of like different topic than like remaining with the vine, but we see here like the carefulness of the farmer or like the gardener and how Jesus works as our as the gardener of pruning back the branches and just asking us to remain as the branch connected to the vine so that in turn we will live out this fruitful life. So
that's great. I love that. I really enjoy the fact that it's not imagery that sounds like super spiritual. Maybe we've spiritualized it over time, but like this imagery is like dirt.
Right.
And plants and like gardening and like getting down on your knees and it's very human and like it's not this like floating in the clouds kind of spiritual mumbo jumbo. It's like giving you this like really dirty metaphor, this very human metaphor. And it reminds me of a quote from a book that I read recently called Life and Holiness by Thomas Merton, who was a monk near Bardstown, Kentucky. But he says this: it is in the ordinary duties and labors of life that the Christian can and should develop his spiritual union with God. And so it's this almost like the remain in me thing works for me on a whole other level, because I think it even challenges our kind of Christianese idea of the quiet time, where I think the quiet time is a great thing. I think it is a phenomenal goal for everyone to have. But I think like I've moved in my life from thinking like, okay, I need to have this one filling period in the morning where I like get all my God in the morning and then I go live my life throughout the rest of my day, and have moved to where I realize like, dang, I am so secular that I need to have more of the Spirit throughout my day. And secular, not in like a godless or like secular music versus Christian music kind of thing, but more like I can just so easily live life as if God isn't present with me, that I need to have more and smaller times throughout my day that kind of help remind me. And so it's so easy for me to think that like my morning quiet time is like me going to the water fountain, aka God. Like God is a water fountain that I fill up on and I go and live my life and I pour out, to use another Christian-y word, throughout my day, and then I come back to him the next day, and then I go live my life without him, and then I come back to him the next day and go live my life without him. When really, he's like the river that I swim in. Like I'm with him all the time, and the problem is that I'm unaware of it, and that I need to. And so, remaining in him to me is like this ever constant present reality that I am prone to forget. But part of my walk with Jesus is being transformed in the renewing of my mind, learning to walk with God. And so this abiding thing changes, and it's so much simpler when it's like seeking relationship with God constantly. And that's not a feeling, that's probably more of an ordering of life kind of thing. But seeking this relationship versus seeking to like check things off of a list.
Yeah.
And be like, I read my chapter today, and now, like, I've had my quiet time. But more being like, okay, Lord, I just got angry in that meeting. And that probably means that there's something going on. Let me, like, spend 5 minutes with you to kind of wrestle with that. And what's going on in my heart that I would get angry at Kennedy for, you know, saying something about my idea in that meeting. And then walking out and being like, oh, this is an opportunity to respond in relationship, instead of being like, okay, well, I'll pray about this tomorrow morning during my quiet time, you know? So this remaining imagery and this kind of gardening imagery, it's very human, and it simplifies it for me in a way that I think is good, because I like to break things into the complexity and then I get lost. And so just coming down to the ground is helpful for me. But before we were recording, you talked about a story from our beloved Gene Parr, and I want to hear that story again.
Yeah. So I was talking with Gene the other day. If you never met Gene, you should meet him. He's like just such a sweet man around our building. The only probably older man that you'll see that has a beautiful white hair with glasses. He's very cute. But I was talking to him the other day, and we were talking about just quiet time and spending time with the Lord. And I was trying to remember this passage that I had read in a devotional one time about the importance of a quiet time, because this is something that I still struggle with, like making time for God in the morning, actually, because I do like to spend it like an extended period of time with God in the morning, while also what Dylan was just talking about, like the little moments of my day.
Yeah.
And so I was trying to remember this thing that I talked to Gene about one time, but he then shared the story with me about, how he kind of like lives out his own quiet time. And he said, the only threshold I hold myself to is to get out of bed in the morning, to make myself a cup of coffee, and then to put my butt in a chair. And I was like, oh, where is he going with this? And he said, when I'm laying in bed and thinking about, okay, it's 7 a.m., my alarm just went off, I'm going to go do my quiet time, I'm not thinking about the end goal of my quiet time of, okay, I'm going to journal, I'm going to get up, make my coffee, get in the chair, journal, pray for an hour, read 2 chapters of John, pray again, end of my quiet time. He's like, I'm not getting out of bed if that happens. But if I only think about and only hold myself to getting out of bed, getting my butt in a chair with my cup of coffee, sometimes the most spiritual thing I do in the morning is drink my coffee with the Lord. And he was like, once I'm in the chair, things naturally flow. Like I'll open up my journal, I'll start writing, or I'll open up my Bible and start reading. And then once I get to that point, I don't want to leave the time that I'm spending with God. But you know, things you do because you go without, you go throughout your day. But if that's what I think about when I first start my day, I won't ever get there. Mm. So I just think about getting out of bed, putting my butt in a chair with my cup of coffee. And I just thought that was so good.
Yeah, that's really great. Because it even hits on that kind of like, you know, just that doesn't sound like some spiritual mastery kind mm-hmm. of stuff where it's like, I aim for sitting in a chair and drinking coffee. But yeah, that's so good. It's that very human metaphor of like, okay, this isn't this floating in the clouds kind of spiritual thing. Mm-hmm. I even love that what you said about the quiet time, because I do think what the quiet time should do is be something that leads us into relationship throughout the day. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't just be the like sufficient aspect of our relationship. Right. That's so good. So there's even like a verse in this passage that I love. And it is, we're kind of jumping back to the bearing fruit thing, but this is to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. That actually like our remaining in him, our abiding, our like being with God can lead to lives of beauty, lives of goodness, lives of truth, lives of transformation. Mm-hmm. That then like points the spotlight back to the Lord in a way that I think is really beautiful, mm-hmm. that somehow when we turn to him in relationship, it can be weaved into, whoa, look at what God can do through a quiet time. Look at what God can do through relationship with him. It's such a beautiful thing to me. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about these last few verses though. I just wanted to hit that really quick because I was like looking at it and like, wow, that's a great mm-hmm. little verse. I promise I was listening to. But there's just this phrase that I want to talk about and ask you what it means to you. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. That's a pretty powerful line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually was reading about this yesterday. Not in this, actually this scripture, but yesterday during my own quiet time, I was reading Psalm 136, which is Jesus repeating, I think it's 22 verses, maybe not. Don't call me on that. Because, you know, I never know. But it says...
it's in there somewhere.
Yeah. It's the psalm that says, blah, 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 his love endures forever. Blah, 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 his love endures forever. Over and over and over again. And at the end of the end of my time reading that, I read it several times because it wasn't really clicking to me. Like how enduring or how faithful or how like pursuant God's love for us is. But at the end of it, I was like, wow, is this a reality for my life? Like, what verse is this in John 15?
It is verse 9.
As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Yeah, now remain in my love. When I was reading the psalm, I was like, do I let how like real and like perfect God's love is really like permeate my soul or my being? Or do I let this like really change how I'm living or inviting people into my life? And the answer to the question was no, because I'm still learning about it, but I don't think I understand fully how perfect God's love is. And as it, this is saying in John 15, like, as my Father loves me, so I have loved you. That's big. Like, that is so much. Mm-hmm. And it's just hard to wrap our minds around how much the Lord loves us and pursues us daily.
Yeah. Now, there's a question that I feel coming, which is, he follows up that statement with, "Now remain in my love. If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his love." And I think there's a question there of like, wait, so God loves me if I obey? Mm. And I don't think that's exactly what is being said here. That there's a relationship that comes from abiding, mm-hmm. but there's not a like standing with God that comes from abiding. Mm-hmm. There can be, in a sense, like you're not getting God to love you more if you abide, and you're not getting him to love you less if you don't. If you spend time with him, he is delighted, I think, is really the key. But then also, like, there's a depth of relationship that we long for with God that is like, you know, there's an A.W. Tozer quote that, like, I'm going to totally paraphrase and probably butcher, but it's the great mystery of God to be able to have him and want more of him at the same time. Hmm. And I think that's the picture that I get from this, is like, to remain in his love is to learn his heart, to obey his commands. Like, his commands are his heartbeat. Mm-hmm. You know, that like, when you love someone, you want to know, like, you ask, like, so what did that make you feel? What did that make you think? Why do you believe this thing? Or why do you, and so with God, we do the same thing, where it's when you relate to him, you go, okay, so if you believe that, like, it's my job to, or even like my responsibility to love my neighbor, why? And mm-hmm. I want to love you. And so the way that I love you is to honor that desire that you have. And so remaining in the love is almost more like what we do, like we love back. Mm-hmm. And that's how loving God is obeying his commands on some level more than it is like us earning. So I just wanted to answer that question before it popped up. But the last verse, this is the last thing we're going to talk about.
Okay.
I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. What a sweet little verse. God longs for our complete joy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we think God doesn't care about our happiness.
He does.
He does. I think he totally does. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's hardship and suffering, but I think St. Ignatius has a quote. I'm just going to keep quoting people.
Quote it.
Where he says, "Sin is what happens when we stop believing that God desires our deepest happiness."
Hmm.
I'll say it one more time.
Yeah, say it again.
Sin is what happens when we stop believing that God desires our deepest happiness.
Hmm. I'm not sure I fully understand what it means, but I like it.
Yeah. Because I think when we step out of abiding, when we step out of remaining, when we step out of obeying commands, we do it because we think happiness will come. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think anyone really goes, oh, I'm going to disobey because disobedience is punk rock, you know, or something. I think they go like, no, this sin is going to make me feel good. It's going to make me feel happy.
Right.
But it can lead, and sometimes it will. Mm-hmm. Because oftentimes sin is really distorting a gift, not just doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. So if we overstep sexual boundaries, it could feel really rewarding and fulfilling and exciting, and like, that is because God designed it that way to be a gift. Mm-hmm. But when it starts to feel shameful, that's because we stepped outside of his design. And when we overstep that bound, part of it is because we think it's going to make us happy, but we're missing the part where God actually designed it to be a gift because he wants us to be full of joy. He wants our joy to be complete and happy.
Yeah. I think that's even like the difference between happiness and joy. And joy being this like disposition of your heart, being joyful through all circumstances, and happiness being this like immediate feeling that we have, but joy being this everlasting kind of place that we live out of. So
yeah,
I got a tattooed on my body because I think it's perfect, or I think it's a good thing to remember.
Yep.
That's the good. Only thing that's on me.
Come on.
Do you have any tattoos?
I don't, but I want to get one sometime. Just too scared, and it's probably going to be the Pine Grove boxes because they're my favorite band. But Kennedy, we're almost out of time, and we could talk about tattoos for hours. But any final thoughts, any last words, any hopes or dreams for our pals who are listening to this podcast, going through their curriculum? What's on your mind?
Yeah, I got hopes and dreams for you all. Especially with this passage, I just think when I was really studying this, like for curriculum, I can read this passage over. I could read this every day and still be like, oh, yes, like I need to just be abiding, or I need to be remaining. I want to live out of this place in my life of always like being in union with God, because it's the only thing he's asking of us. The only thing he's asking is to remain in him, and out of it, everything else flows. And I think over the course of the past couple years, ever since I've been on staff, I've been learning about living out of the overflow, or digging this deep well with God, and so that we are living out of an overflow and not living on our own strength. And so my hopes and dreams for you all is that this passage really does like permeate your soul and affects and changes the way that you're living and your relationship with God. And so if nothing else, I really do pray that like you spend time really diving deep into this passage of John.
That's great. You're a pastor. I love it. Hey, if you are a friend from outside of CSF, man, thanks for checking out this podcast. We would love for you to find some of the written resources that we've made to go along with this. And so you can find that at ukcsf.org. See you later.
Bye.